I'm Veronica Dudo. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, drug boss takedown, violence grips Mexico as cartel leader El Mencho is killed, and the violence may not be over yet. Blockbuster blizzard, many Americans digging out of the snow today after a major storm. We look at what lies ahead. Plus, leading his flock.
I see in you a special presence of closeness, of nearness amid the challenges of this area.
The message of hope from Pope Leo to a parish that's no stranger to difficulties. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Polycarp. Our top story tonight. Following a massive military raid in Tapalpa, Jalisco, Mexican authorities have confirmed the death of Nemesio Aciguera Cervantes, known as El Mencho. He was the leader of the Jalisco New Generation cartel and died from his wounds while being airlifted to Mexico City. In response, his cartel set off a wave of deadly attacks. At least 25 National Guard members and numerous cartel operatives were killed in violent clashes. The deadly chaos has spilled over into 20 states across Mexico, with over 250 narco blockades turning highways into infernos. From Guadalajara to the border, cities are under code red as the Mexican National Guard fights back against coordinated ambushes.
Major flames there. Huge plumes everywhere. Another big one over there.
The situation for tourists has been alarming. Videos from inside Puerto Vallarta and Guadalajara airports show passengers running for cover and abandoning luggage as reports of armed men near the terminals sparked panic. The U.S. and Canadian governments have issued shelter-in-place orders for Jalisco, Quintana Roo, and Baja California.
En este momento, pues, es garantizar la paz y la seguridad de toda la población.
President Claudia Sheinbaum is urging calm, insisting that despite the chaos, most of Mexico is operating normally. She praised the military's bravery and highlighted the absolute coordination between state and federal forces. Sheinbaum confirmed that U.S. intelligence was vital in taking down the cartel leader, signaling a major win for her administration's security strategy. I want to bring in Brett Johnson. He serves as pastor at Eastside Christian Church in Las Vegas. He is leading a mission to help rebuild a church in Guadalajara, Mexico. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you, Veronica. Thanks for your interest in this story.
For sure. Now, can you tell us what has the last 24 hours been like for you?
Yeah, you know, everything was very calm in Guadalajara, Mexico, until 9 a.m. on Sunday morning local time, when everything changed, like radically within just minutes. We had gone out for coffee and came back to our hotel and looked out, and there was a fire only a couple blocks from us. And then we heard a massive fire response at like 20 fire trucks. And I couldn't understand really why there was such a strong response, later realizing that the fire we were seeing out of our window was not the only fire burning in town. And apparently somebody had lit vehicles on fire near the main central market and the main intersection in the center of the city. And so then at that point, the city started shutting down. The government apparently called what they call a code red. And it asked all businesses to close. The city went into a shutdown. So a city of millions of people I've never seen anything like it, quite like it that quickly. A big city just to completely shut down. Businesses shut their doors, asked people to leave, and the streets emptying immediately. It was crazy.
How alarming was it, and are you relying on your faith during these difficult times?
Yeah, it was... It was disturbing. We did have an incident not long after that where we had returned to the hotel and some people from the street ran into our hotel lobby seeking shelter and screaming, Corale, Corale, you know, run, run. And, you know, that was alarming because apparently they had seen something that alarmed them out on the street. So the Mexican people are unsettled, I would say, and nervous.
And lastly, can you tell us a bit about your message and what you're doing there?
Yeah, so I came down here to work. Every year we come with a group of men to work at a camp that was established in the 1950s by an American family, and it serves youth from the city of Guadalajara. And so we bring a group down every year to do some construction, repairs, and painting, cleaning, along with Mexican friends. And it's a great week. And so everything was good. We finished last week, did all of our projects. And then my wife flew down for 4 days of R&R and fun. And that obviously has changed.
Mm. Pastor Brett Johnson, thank you so much. And please stay safe.
Thank you, Veronica, so much.
The U.S. has ordered an emergency drawdown in Lebanon. Non-essential staff and families are leaving as the threat of a potentially imminent military strike on Iran looms. With nuclear talks deadlocked, the State Department calls it a prudent move. For now, the Beirut embassy remains operational, but only for essential personnel. Tensions have escalated between the U.S. and Iran as President Trump has built up the largest military presence in the Middle East in decades and repeatedly threatened action if Tehran does not negotiate a deal to constrain its nuclear program. President Donald Trump is not backing down on his tariff push. He now wants a global tariff of 15%. That's up from the 10% he announced last week, right after the U.S. Supreme Court struck down many of his emergency tariffs. And that's not all. The president is telling other countries not to play games with what he calls the ridiculous Supreme Court decision. President Trump says if they do, they will be met with a much higher tariff and worse. On social media today, the president says he does not have to go back to Congress to get approval of tariffs, adding, quote, it has already been gotten in many forms a long time ago. The U.S. Supreme Court's decision to strike down the bulk of President Trump's tariffs under an emergency statute is seen by many lawmakers as a major blow to his economic agenda. The justices ruled that only Congress, not the president, has the authority to impose sweeping tariffs. So the big question now is, what's next for Congress? Let's bring in Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales. Eric, what are lawmakers saying about the decision?
Well, Veronica, it's mixed feelings right now. The high court's decision set off a scramble on Capitol Hill over what role Congress has in reasserting its authority over trade policy. The decision also cools, at least for now, probable votes to nix certain trade tariffs that would almost certainly pass both the House and the Senate. Democrats say that they see this as a winning issue, calling the court's decision, quote, political gold.
Let's call these tariffs for what they are. Tax on the American people. The tariffs that Trump imposed a year ago that the courts knocked out, and the tariffs he's imposing now are all taxes on the American people, raising their costs.
Last year, the government collected an estimated $287 billion in taxes and fees, much of it driven by President Trump's tariffs. House Speaker Mike Johnson defended the tariffs, writing on X, quote, no one can deny that the president's use of tariffs have brought in billions of dollars and created immense leverage for America's trade strategy and for securing strong, reciprocal, America-first trade agreements with countries that have been taking advantage of American workers for decades. But other Republicans, like Congressman Don Bacon, disagree.
I'm a conservative, and conservatives do not believe in tariffs. And if we do tariffs, we know that it has to be authorized by Congress, not just by the president. That is the conservative position.
The court's decision set up a battle over refunds. Companies large and small may be eligible for hundreds of billions of dollars in payments. Democrats are demanding that American citizens should also get their money back.
This administration took money out of the pockets of American families, upwards of $1,700 per family. They should give it back. They should give it back. We can have, and we're working on legislation that would be able to have this refund back to the American people.
President Trump says he's opposed to refunds, predicting years of litigation. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham agrees, writing, quote, I support President Trump's decision to fight refunds. I do not think they are necessary or appropriate, and I'm sure that they will be the subject of much litigation.
As was mentioned, Senate Democrats have introduced legislation requiring the Trump administration to refund up to $175 billion gained through the tariffs that were, quote, unlawfully collected, according to the high court, within 180 days. Now, some of the U.S. Supreme Court justices who voted to invalidate these tariffs are likely to be sitting right in front of the president in the House chamber during tomorrow night's State of the Union address. So anything that the president will say on trade will be watched closely. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Across much of the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic region, people are digging out after a major winter storm. From New England down to Northern Virginia, people are dealing with heavy snow and other impacts from the massive storm. Hundreds of thousands have lost electricity, schools have been closed, and road conditions remain dangerous. So far, thousands of flights have been disrupted as cleanup is expected to last for days. Meteorologist Alana Cameron with Weather Nation has more.
We continue to track this powerful nor'easter across the northeastern United States with so many impacts that are still being received across these areas. One of the big ones is the power outages that we've been dealing with. You can see across the northeast, most of the state of Massachusetts dealing with tons of power outages out there along the Jersey Shore, seeing those outages as well. And a lot of that has been because of how gusty these winds have been within the last 24 hours. Just looking at some of the top reports that have come across portions of the Cape and up through southern Maine and all the way down through Long Island, we've seen widespread 60 to 80 mile an hour winds that have happened. Here's some of our top wind reports that we've seen across the Northeast. Coming out of Nantucket in Massachusetts, we've had hurricane force winds. 83 mile an hour winds have come out of Nantucket from earlier today. Wellfleet in Massachusetts had 77 mile an hour winds. A lot of these from Rhode Island through Massachusetts. That's where we've seen some of the gustiest of the winds. Looking back over the last 24 hours, some of the heavy snow really started to come down late Sunday across the Delmarva Peninsula. So up through areas of Delaware, in through portions of Maryland, Jersey, and then within the day on Monday, a lot more of that snow has filled into areas like Long Island, southern Connecticut. Pretty much the entire state of Rhode Island is currently under about 30 inches of snow out there, and still some of those numbers are expected to climb all the way up through the coast of Maine. Here's those top totals that have come out of the day. Providence, 33 and a half inches of snow and climbing. North Kingstown in Rhode Island has also seen just as much snow. So much snow. This was the high end of the forecast. And that's what happened as the snow just really came down so heavily across these areas. We also broke a record in Rhode Island during the day on Monday as well for the amount of snow. Now, here's what we were seeing Monday afternoon. The coastal low pressure system still sitting off the coast, but still pulling in those northerly winds to drop those temperatures, to keep the gusty winds going, and still keep some of those blizzard alerts in effect through tonight and into early tomorrow morning. So spots like Boston up through Bangor and through Long Island Sound, you do still remain under those blizzard warnings through the next number of hours. So zooming on in here across the coast is really where we're seeing some of the gustiest of the winds and the lowest of the visibility. So as we watch this low pressure system continue to move its way through, we're still expecting a little bit more snow to come across these areas, but the worst of it does seem to wrap up through tonight, and then it's going to be all about the cleanup and trying to get power restored across portions of the Northeast. So it's a potentially historic winter storm across these areas, and we'll be keeping an eye on the forecast. Back to you.
Yes, it is. Thank you so much. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly. Solemn occasion. President Trump creates a day to remember those who were killed by illegal immigrants were at the White House. And a man is shot and killed at President Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence. We talked to a former Secret Service agent about the incident. Another high-profile arrest in the United Kingdom related to Jeffrey Epstein. Peter Mandelson, the former UK ambassador to the United States, was taken into custody on suspicion of misconduct. Police are investigating whether he passed sensitive government information to Epstein more than a decade ago. He is not facing any allegations of sexual misconduct. The arrest comes 4 days after the former Prince Andrew was arrested over a similar offense. In California, Nick Reiner has has pleaded not guilty in the killing of his parents, director Rob Reiner and Michelle Reiner. The 32-year-old is accused of fatally stabbing them in Los Angeles back in December. He's been in custody since then. Police have not said anything about possible motives, and prosecutors have not decided whether to seek the death penalty. President Donald Trump signs a proclamation designating February 22nd as National Angel Family Day. The White House says on this day, the nation remembers and honors the thousands of American lives stolen from us by criminal illegal aliens. The president called it a truly solemn occasion as he addressed, in his words, heartbroken Americans who have lost loved ones to the scourge of illegal immigration. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Veronica, President Trump also called today a big day and a very important day. He said for decades, angel families were betrayed by the government and totally ignored by the media.
President Donald Trump addresses angel families, referring to relatives of people killed by someone who was in the U.S. illegally.
Americans like Lakin and Grant and Javier, Joshua, Rocky, Rachel, Kayla, these are great people, and we're never going to forget them. I'll never forget them.
The mother of Lake and Riley joined the president at the podium, remembering and honoring her daughter.
Lakin was the most responsible, hardworking, kind, selfless, beautiful Christian.
The 22-year-old Georgia nursing student was killed 2 years ago while out jogging. Her case became a flashpoint in the debate over immigration.
This could be any family. This happened to my family. This could be any one of your families.
President Trump also introduced Marie Vega, who described what happened to her family in a violent encounter with illegal immigrants.
While trying to defend us, Harvey was shot in the chest and killed. My husband, Javier Sr., was shot in the back.
President Trump took a swipe at the media for its coverage of the issue.
When I first got involved with the angel families, I had a meeting. It was so sad. And they got up and spoke, and the media literally just turned off the cameras. They didn't want to hear them. It was my first glimpse as to what was happening. These are sick people that cover stories like that, or that don't cover them, which is worse.
Later, the president, with family members by his side, signing the proclamation, and the U.S. Army chorus performing Amazing Grace. President Trump said he had been waiting a long time to sign today's proclamation, and added there were so many different legal roadblocks. Tomorrow he delivers the State of the Union. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
U.S. Secret Service says an armed man was shot and killed at President Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort early Sunday morning. Authorities identified the man as 21-year-old Austin Tucker Martin from North Carolina, saying he unlawfully entered the secure perimeter of Mar-a-Lago about 1:30 a.m. The president and first lady were at the White House at the time of the incident. Martin was reportedly carrying a shotgun and a fuel can. According to officials, he worked as a golf course groundskeeper and sold illustrations of golf courses. Authorities are investigating his background and motive. Joining us now is Paul Ekloff, a former Secret Service agent. Paul, thanks so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I have attended some charity events at Mar-a-Lago, and they have a very strict perimeter and a lot of security. How was the suspect able to enter the secure perimeter?
Well, having been there, you've noted that this is a very active site, even when the president is not in residence. There's a security perimeter and there are protocols in place. But when he's not there, that perimeter does shrink. The north gate on Ocean Boulevard, where the subject entered, was the outermost perimeter at the time that he was able to enter.
Now, what are some of the protective layers and advanced planning usually that do exist in Palm Beach to prevent anyone from getting close enough to prompt this kind of a confrontation?
There are certainly a number of layers. When the president's not there, he only breached the outermost of those layers and was immediately neutralized. But there are overt and covert assets, whether that's physical presence, signage, Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office, Police Department, Secret Service, There are cameras, there are sensors, there are alarms, and they all worked impeccably on Saturday night or Sunday morning. They were able to detect this individual immediately.
Can you talk a little bit about what happens behind the scenes to make sure everything works correctly?
Absolutely. Well, there's a command post that monitors all of those overt and covert assets, and they act as the nerve center. And there was a post stander at that north gate who had opened it to allow a staff member to leave. When this young man ran inside with his gas can and shotgun, he was immediately identified. And there is a communications chain that is activated, a protective intelligence response team, and an interdiction team that immediately goes to that location to confront the person who has entered the facility. Notifications are made, but it all happens simultaneously. And the local police is involved in that communications chain as well.
Now, this is the third attempt on President Trump's life since he was a candidate in 2024. Has there been any other presidents with this many close calls?
Well, there haven't been presidents with this many close calls that the public is aware of. President Ford in 1975 had two active assassination attempts within weeks. That would be the closest modern parallel to President Trump. I don't have full faith and confidence that this was an assassination attempt. It is possible that this young man wanted to be killed by police. It's sad and tragic, but with mental health issues, there clearly was some sort of a stressor or an exigent circumstance that led him to leave his house and purchase a shotgun. We may never know his motives. Conspiracy theorists will add stories and people will opine to try to fill the gaps, but the complexity of human behavior just can't be put into a simple box.
Paul Ekloff, thank you so much for adding some more context to this unfortunate situation.
Thank you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, A Shepherd's Heart. This Lent, the Holy Father offers a visible reminder of closeness to the faithful. We are in Rome. Plus, a story of one of the church's greatest early martyrs. The 14th stresses that this Lenten season offers the faithful an opportunity to let the Lord cleanse, purify, and transform them into a unique masterpiece.
Che ha come termine l'amore e l'abbandono del Signore.
At the Sunday address, the Holy Father reflected on the gospel passage where Jesus enters the desert and is tempted by the devil. The Pope said by resisting the evil one, he demonstrates how we too can overcome the devil's deception and snares. By praying, fasting, and giving alms, we can renew our cooperation with the Lord and allow him to heal the wounds of sin and help make our lives blossom. Pope Leo added that penance does not impoverish our humanity, but enriches, purifies, and strengthens it as we move toward a horizon that has, as its aim, love and surrender to God. This Lent, the Holy Father is conducting a series of five pastoral visits to parishes across Rome. He made his second stop this weekend at the Sacred Heart of Jesus Parish. As EWTN News Vatican correspondent Valentina Di Donato tells us, this trip is being seen as a sign of his desire to be close to the people.
Nearly 1,000 faithful representing the parish's many groups and ministries gathered in anticipation, eager to see the Holy Father. The energy was palpable as they welcomed their bishop with warmth and enthusiasm.
Dear friends, meeting you today, I see in you a special presence of closeness, of nearness amid the challenges of this area.
Situated beside the Termini central train station of the city, the parish stands at the crossroads of modern Rome, where travelers rush in and out of the city and where refugees, the unemployed, and families struggling to afford rent seek stability and hope. The Holy Father did not shy away from the stark contrasts surrounding the church.
Just a few meters away, one can touch the contradictions of our time, the carefree attitude of those who arrive and depart with every comfort, and those who have no roof over their heads, the great potential for good, and widespread violence, the desire to work honestly, and the illicit trade in drugs and prostitution.
During his visit, the Pope reminded the faithful that this parish is an invitation to be a sign of closeness and charity in communities where a source of hope is greatly needed. At the end of the Eucharistic celebration, the pontiff prayed together with the Salesians and showed his affection for the community, joking about his desire to belong to their congregation.
When I was a young man, before entering the Augustinians, I visited the Salesian community. You came in second place. Sorry about that.
In Rome, Valentina Di Gennaro for EWTN News Nightly.
Today we celebrate the feast of Saint Polycarp, martyr and bishop of Smyrna in what is now modern-day Turkey. Saint Polycarp was a close friend of Saint Ignatius of Antioch and a disciple of Saint John the Evangelist. He served as a gifted bishop, fought heresies, and preached the faith with great skill, having learned it directly from one of the apostles. In the year 155, the 86-year-old bishop was arrested and burned at the stake. According to tradition, miraculously, the flames did not touch him, but he was eventually killed with a spear. Following his death, he was immediately revered as one of the greatest of the church's early martyrs. Saint Polycarp, pray for us. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, YouTube, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Veronica Judo. Good night and God bless.